Sit Tight, Take Hold. A Good Omens podfic, written by Needed and read by Literarian and Jub. Part 1 of the hashtag Rainbow Road series. Chapter 7. Maybreak, South Downs. Summary. The F1 calendar has a 2-week hiatus. However, will the ineffable idiots spend their time? This features cute puppies and go-karting. Anthony fucking Crowley.
I'm bored out of my mind. Recommendations? Might come up to London.
I thought you were with your mum.
I'm with my mum's dog. I'm watching her while she's on vacation in Beirut.
You're fucking with me.
Sadly, no.
Where are you?
Izira throws his head back on the settee in the sunroom of his mother's cottage. Cottage is a quaint, inconspicuous way to describe his mother's mansion on the south coast of England, which she purchased after his dad's death. It's made of old Victorian brickwork and has the space for an overrun garden and a lookout onto the beach. If he cranes his neck out the back porch, he can see the white, chalky cliffs wrapping around the ocean and feel the breeze on his face. It almost feels like being in Greece, except the sun seems dimmer and the ocean is a darker blue than the Mediterranean Sea. The estate is a lot quieter too than growing up in Patras. Being in England has always left him feeling bereft. There's a distinct absence of his father in this house, or of himself, and wandering around like a ghost makes his skin itch. Fortunately, he won't have to stay for long. His mum will fly back on Friday night, and then they'll have one awkward day together on Saturday, milling around the farmer's market before he'll get to leave and fly back to his cousins and his home. He squints when he hears a suspicious scuffle inside the house and throws his phone down before racing into the living room.
Ceres, no!
He shouts as a white-tipped tail darts around the corner, Izira skidding after it. He catches up to his mum's beagle in the mudroom while the pup helps itself to his shoe. He scoops her up, wrangling his footwear free. It's clear of any damage, as far as he can tell, except for a high quantity of slobber. He drops it off at the front door and takes Ceres with him, tucked under his arm, back to the sunroom.
You're a troublemaker, he tells her, cooing.
She wiggles, trying to break away, and nips his fingers unsuccessfully. With his free hand, he picks up his phone and rolls his eyes at the newest text. Anthony fucking Crowley.
If it's a secret, you don't have to tell me. Wink emoji.
Ever since that day in Austria when they walked the Red Bull Ring together, things have been odd between them. Off kilter. It's an odd sensation to look at someone he wants, and wants desperately, knowing he's wanted back. He tries not to think too much about the resigned, exhausted look on Crowley's face when he asked to stay friends. The last 2 months have been a whirlwind, an unbelievable set of circumstances his 15-year-old self could never have dreamed of. He thought sitting in an F1 car for the first time at pre-season testing had been the highlight of his life, but since then he's scored points in 3 out of the 5 races and put his name out there for the other teams to take notice. Gabriel had personally shaken his hand after Baku and told him his name was being floated around already for Rookie of the Year across all FIA motorsports. It's insane. And, oh yeah, then he snogged Anthony fucking Crowley and stole his hat. Contrary to Raf's beliefs, he hasn't used it for wanking fodder, but sometimes just looking at the stupid Renault logo makes him want to head for a cold shower. He opens his keyboard, attempting to type a reply, but Ceres goes for his thumb and boops the keyboard. Anthony fucking Crowley. Shit, no, stop, Ceres! She snatches the phone in her mouth and bounds off the love seat. She makes it back around the corner before yelping and dropping it when it starts to ring.
Well then, he tells her, that's what you get for being rude.
She looks up at him and wags her tail. He stops to rub her head before grabbing the phone again, wiping a smear of slobber off the screen, and then he swipes up to answer.
Hello?
Did you have a stroke?
Crowley says over the line, a hint of amusement in his voice. At the sound of that teasing drawl, Izira goes through several emotions all at once. First, elation, and then temperance, because it's not like that. Then he huffs in disgust when he puts the phone up to his face and it smells like dog breath.
My mum's new puppy says hello.
And how exactly did you, a world-class driver, get stuck dog-sitting?
Izira shoos Ceres out of the sunroom and follows her into the kitchen, tucking the phone between his ear and shoulder while he goes for the fridge.
My mum has entered this new stage in life where she beach hops somewhere new every month. Next month it's Mallorca.
And what? She can't beach hop to Australia or Azerbaijan to see your race?
It's not like that. We're not.
He sets a carton of juice on the counter and sticks his tongue between his teeth.
She's been a bit weird about watching me race since my dad died when I was 19. I think it was just difficult for her to follow me all around the world alone.
He shuffles awkwardly before busying himself with a butter knife and a scone.
Oh shit, I'm sorry.
Anyway, she'll be there at Silverstone.
Crowley says, and Izira can imagine him rubbing his hands together in excitement. It makes him smile.
Do you have anyone coming? It's a big race for you, isn't it?
Silverstone is England's home race and one of the oldest in Formula One history. It should be an exciting year since there are four drivers racing under the United Kingdom's flag, not even counting Izira, who has dual citizenship. Mostly, everyone will be there to watch Lewis Hamilton, but Crowley is still beloved in the country. After all, Izira would know, being both half English and a huge Anthony fucking Crowley supporter.
Nah, but you know, I don't buy into all the pressure to perform on the home circuit. Monza is still my Achilles heel. Silverstone is just... One day when I retire, I hope they let me rent the track out once a year anyway.
I'll sneak you in.
He can feel Crowley's grin through the phone, can picture it clearly. It's not the smile from the posters or promotional videos. It's not the tight-lipped strain he gives in press conferences. It's wide and sharp and a little teasing, sending a wash of heat straight to Ezira's gut. He swallows.
What are you doing then?
Bugger all. Went for a run and lifted this morning, but bless bees, they've gotten me off of all interviews and promo shit for the next 2 weeks, so I can just relax. I think I might go for a drive.
Of course you would find driving relaxing after, you know, driving for your life.
You don't like driving off the track?
Ezira shudders.
God, no. I'm like, looking at every car like their competition, except they're all terrible and they don't know how to use the indicator.
Technically, in F1, we don't have indicators.
And technically, in F1, I am less likely to get into an accident.
There's a guffaw on the other line.
I'm going to regret this, but what if I come pick you up and we go for a drive?
Ezira looks around the cottage for an excuse to say no, or maybe an excuse to say yes. It'd be a stupid idea after they agreed to give each other some space, but the alternative means sitting alone in a massive house watching the dog eat dirt.
I'm down on the south coast. It's a bit of a drive for you from London, isn't it? A couple of hours?
Crowley lets out a bark of laughter.
Don't worry, Angel. I can get there faster.
Ezira almost drops the phone when he hears the endearment. Angel. He'd said it once before, mockingly, when they were both drunk in his hotel room back in Australia, but he'd forgotten all about it.
I've told you before, I'm no angel.
I disagree. I stand by it that you look like one of those Michelangelo paintings, cherubic cheeks and a round little ass.
You've been staring, have you? I can't tell if you're insulting me or flirting.
Oh, trust me,
Crowley says on the other end of the line.
I am definitely appreciative.
Ezira holds back a smile, pressing his lips together.
Stop.
Sorry, sort of. It's bloody difficult sitting around my big empty flat when I know you're in the same country.
And yeah, isn't that the truth? Ezira has only picked up his phone and opened his messenger app 100 times this morning before flipping it face down. He made it a whole 2 hours before texting Crowley in a fit of boredom and anxiety.
All right, I'll give. Come and get me.
Yeah?
There's a hint of surprise in Crowley's voice.
Let's go out, you know, casually.
Right.
I'm losing my mind over here.
See, you get it. We're drivers. We're not meant to sit still.
Then he gasps.
Ooh, I have an idea.
Ezira doesn't like that tone. It's the tone Crowley uses when he's about to do something reckless, like, say, whipping shitties in front of the track cam on the Nürburgring or dousing liquor in the ice bath.
Do I want to know?
It's a surprise,
Crowley says in a rush.
Text me your address. I'll see you soon.
The line clicks. He looks down at his phone and blinks. Well, that was something. At 2 o'clock, Ezira doesn't need to know Crowley has arrived because he can hear him, a loud, voracious roar pulling up to the cottage. The nearby neighbors are either scandalized, impressed, or scandalized that they've been impressed. He can't help but whistle when he steps out the front door, torn between his desire to see Crowley and his desire to get behind what might be one of the most beautiful cars he's ever laid eyes on.
"Is that a LaFerrari?"
he asks, his voice pitching upwards. The butterfly door lifts open and Crowley slides out of the car. He runs his hand over her roof and then comes around and pats the hood.
"Do you like her?"
"Jesus!"
The LaFerrari is yellow and black with vented hood scoops and racing mirrors, deep inside scoops and enormous black wheels. He doesn't need to know a thing about cars to know it looks fast, but fortunately for him, he knows exactly what that V12 engine and dual-clutch transmission can do. Just looking at it makes Ezira groan. He shakes his head, unable to look away.
"Wow, wow, that's magnificent."
Crowley beams and leans on the hood.
"Is this what my future looks like?"
Ezira asks.
"If you race for Ferrari, I got it as a gift after my world championship."
He whimpers and shakes his head.
"I'll be lucky if I can afford a Nissan at the end of the season."
"Well, you said you don't like driving. So I guess I'll have to take you everywhere."
"Oh no, I definitely want to drive that."
Then Ezira turns to look at Crowley properly for the first time since his arrival, and his mouth goes dry for an entirely different reason. He is in his customary black jeans and a nondescript black Henley, but instead of his racing shoes, he has snakeskin boots on and he sports his red Ferrari hat to match his car. Ezira's tongue grows heavy.
"Hey."
Crowley, sensing the shift in mood, tilts his head to one side.
"Hey,"
he says softly.
"Ready? I have to drive because you don't know where we're going."
"You still won't tell me?"
"You'll like it, I promise."
He pushes off the hood and walks over to the passenger side to open the door. Ezira, giddy, rubs his hands together.
"God, I can't believe I'm about to sit in this car."
He slides into the black leather seat with yellow stitching to match the exterior and immediately runs his hands over the carbon fiber dash, reaching over to touch the yellow Ferrari insignia on the wheel with relish. Crowley grins at him from the other side. When he starts the engine, the whole car vibrates, a pleasant roar around them. He puts in the clutch and revs the gas just to make it purr, and then he launches out of the drive and onto the backcountry road with a squeal. For Ezira, it feels like being on the track. Even though he's not the one behind the wheel, he moves with the car, the stiff suspension letting him feel every bump and turn. Then he looks at Crowley, whose hands are on the wheel, grip firm and sure, the corded muscle of his forearms flexing from where he pushed his sleeve up. He looks utterly relaxed and confident, hat and glasses off, his mouth relaxed in an easy smile. They drive for a half hour, enjoying the loud rumble of the engine, which drowns out any conversation. The silence is comfortable, and every now and then Crowley takes his eyes off the road for a second, gaze flicking over to him, always with a grin. England's lush green scenery zips past them as they race along the coast before moving inward to Brighton. Izira is too caught up in the exhilaration to pay much attention to where they are, and when they pull into the car park, he lets out a surprised garble.
Oh my God!
You've been here before?
Have I been here before? Every spring break of my childhood.
He makes to open the door and pauses. He says, running his hands over the interior.
How do I?
Crowley throws his head back and laughs before pushing a button on the console. Then the doors lift upwards, freeing them both. Izira sighs as he stands up and stares at the front of the building where an old, fainted sign in dire need of paint reads Trackmania, Go-Karts and More, a swell of excitement and nostalgia spilling out of him.
Hi,
Crowley says, waving his hand at a nearby kid standing in the parking lot with a melting ice cream cone and a gaping mouth. The kid blinks before gasping.
That's a cool car!
Thanks!
Behind the building, they hear the whirring, high-pitched whine of the go-karts. Izira jogs to the entrance, waiting for Crowley to catch up before going inside. A 13-year-old kid sits behind the counter on a stool on his Nintendo and barely looks up when he greets them. Then he yells, "Dad!" A man pops around the corner in his mid-40s with a bit of a belly and an old Rotham Williams racing cap and slaps down two clipboards on the table. He rattles off the disclaimer spiel and highlights where they should write their names and takes the clipboards back when they're done.
"What's your helmet size?"
The man glimpses down at the paperwork and then back up again.
"Holy shit,"
he says.
"You're Anthony J. Crowley."
"Yeah, hi. I wear 23.
"What are you doing here?"
Crowley shakes his head.
Just taking a friend out for some fun."
The man looks at Izira and then down at the paperwork again before letting out a barking laugh.
"My God, I never thought I'd have two actual, real-life Formula One drivers in my rental. Now all I need is Lewis Hamilton to walk in the door."
He extends his hand.
"Hi, I'm Henry, the owner."
"I can give him a call if you'd like,"
Crowley says, accepting the enthusiastic handshake. Henry shakes his head, still laughing to himself, and turns around to the helmet.
"He is a 23,
he says, tossing it to Crowley.
"And you?"
24, please.
"All right, I'll get you personally set up out back, just through these doors there."
They get set up in their carts, and Crowley laughs as he squeezes in.
"I can't remember the last time I sat in one of these."
"I feel weird without my racing overalls on," Izira says. "Like I'm naked."
Henry waves at them to get their attention and shouts over the roar of the engines.
"Green light is go! Yellow means slow down! Red means pull over! I don't suppose I need to tell you the rest of the rules,"
Henry says.
"I'm sorry, but they only go up to 50 miles per hour.
Izira, ahead of Crowley, calls out,
"Good, an even playing field. We'll see who truly is the best driver."
Then the lights turn green and they both tear off the start line. There are a handful of others out on the small quarter-mile track, a couple of parents and their kids, and some teenagers bumming around. Izira pushes the little cart as fast as it can go, cutting it at the apex of corners and weaving nonsensically through the straightaways so Crowley can't overtake him. It'd be a dangerous, stupid tactic if they weren't used to crazier maneuvers going 180 miles an hour for their jobs. Still, Crowley manages to get around him, flipping him the bird as he passes. By the time they've cleared 20 laps, they're breathless from laughter, having passed each other several times. Izira groans when he gets out of the cart.
Oh, my ass is numb.
I think I'm stuck.
Izira comes around and gives him a hand, pulling him out. Then Crowley shucks his helmet, his hair a matted mess, and cheeks high and flushed, eyes glossy with adrenaline.
God, that was amazing! I'm dying for some chips!
The inside of Trackmania is lined with old 90s arcade carpet. Its neon colors faded from decades of spilled soda and beer and muddy shoes, and they meander over to the food counter, comprised of a single deep fryer and a flat top for burgers. They each order a plate of fish and chips and a pitcher of beer to share before making their way to a booth by the bowling alley. They are sweaty and sticky, the backs of their shirts clinging to the vinyl seats as they pick through their grease-laden food. After several moments of silent, furious chewing, Izira leans back and sighs.
Thanks, he says, knocking their shoulders together. I needed this. I was losing my mind sitting at home.
Crowley snorts, stretching out his long legs as he slides down the booth. By design or happenstance, he ends up leaning a bit closer, his cooling skin brushing against Izira's arm.
It's only Tuesday. What are you going to do for the next several days?
I don't know. I'd like to come up to London for a day or two, bum around the National Archives and maybe the Tate. I can't leave the dog alone all day, though, so it's kind of a bummer.
Crowley pushes his sunglasses up his face and looks at Izira, wide-eyed.
Why, Fail? Are you a nerd?
It's shocking, I know. I can read more than a few traffic signs, he says.
Crowley grins around a sip from his pint, his throat flexing as he swallows.
Why don't you bring the pup up? You can crash at mine.
For real? She'll eat your shoes.
Well, it's a good thing I have a closet.
Then he fidgets with a soggy chip.
And a spare bedroom. You know, I wasn't presuming that...
Izira lets out a surprised huff. He nudges him again.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thanks. What if you crash at mine for the night and we can go up tomorrow?
Crowley clicks his teeth shut and chews on the inside of his lip.
I'd like that,
he says after a long pull of beer.
Thanks.
His grin is soft and tentative before he digs back into his basket of food. They spend the next hour bowling, working off the warm haze from the alcohol, their technique improving inversely related to how drunk they are. Izira realizes as the evening winds down and the other patrons pack up that it's been forever since he's just had fun. It's not that when he's with Raf they don't laugh, but in whatever they do, Shark Week marathons and endless rounds of Among Us, there's also an undercurrent of tension over the next race or the next qualifier. Tonight, Crowley doesn't seem to want to talk shop, bouncing between interrogating him about his favorite music and books and what's so bloody interesting to see at the archives, a spark of energy that orbits close to him before spinning away with a peal of laughter. "I just think it's interesting," he tells him on the way out to the car park. "There's so much history and also so much..." He tilts his head, grappling for the right words. "I don't know. I come from two very different civilizations, and I like studying them, how they contrast one another." Crowley fastens his seatbelt with a click and tosses his hat and sunglasses under the seat. The car starts with a rumble and he reaches over, putting his hand on the back of Azira's headrest as he turns to look over his shoulder in reverse.
"Do you think you'd ever live anywhere else in the world?"
His hand radiates warmth, and he smells like exhaust and fryer grease and the mineral oil from the bowling lanes. His face is a warm glow from the headlights of an oncoming car.
"Oh, that's easy. Japan. I can't wait until we go to Suzuka. I'm going to eat so many pork buns I throw up in my car the next day. What about you?"
"If you asked me 10 years ago, I would have said Monaco. That's where all the rich and famous go, after all."
Azira can picture it and nods.
"You would fit right in with your LaFerrari. I might do some scuba diving while we're there. Maybe check on the Automobile Museum."
"They have a botanical garden I like to walk through. And a rose garden at the palace."
They pull up to the exit of the car park and wait for the traffic to pass. Azira takes a moment to study him.
"I didn't know you were into horticulture."
Crowley shrugs, brushing him off.
"My therapist says I need to care for something, so I have an aloe plant."
He drums his fingers on the wheel.
"And a pothos. And this fucking African violet that makes me want to drown it."
"Who knew that Anthony Crowley was a botany extraordinaire?"
"Shut up,"
he says as he floors the accelerator, grinning. The ride back to the cottage passes in silence, like before, but this time it feels a bit more muted. There's something about the blanket of the night sky and no light pollution, the stars visible over the waterfront, that leaves him pensive and reflective. They take their time meandering from the car to the front door, the crunch of their footsteps on the gravel loud, drawn together in the cool evening, and though they keep their hands in their respective jeans pockets, Azira can feel Crowley's magnetism pulling him in.
"Let me take care of Ceres and I'll get you set up."
"Yeah, of course,"
Crowley says, following him into the house. They're greeted by the sound of puppy claws on the laminate as Ceres bounds around the corner, and when Azira turns on the light, he's met with toilet paper strewn all over the downstairs from the bathroom.
"Hi," he says with a groan.
Crowley comes up behind him and stifles a laugh when he sees the mess. He squeezes Azira's shoulder.
"Go let her out. I'll clean this up."
"Are you sure?"
go.
He takes her out to the garden and stands there for a long moment, vacant-eyed as she sniffs around, her puppy ears still dragging on the ground. Then he looks over his shoulder and back into the cottage. Crowley meanders around, bending over to pick up scraps of shredded tissue, every now and again stopping to readjust his glasses. Izira will remember to dim the lights when he comes inside, if it means seeing those elusive eyes again, and the thought leaves him a little breathless. Then Crowley looks up and out the window, catching him staring, and he smiles, boyish and impish, a playful little grin. Izira has spent over a decade watching this man on TV, podiums, press junkets, and corny F1 YouTube promos, but he hadn't known about his secret smile until now, the genuine one that deepens his crow's feet and softens the hard lines of his face. He's startled out of his reverie when he feels two damp paws on his pant leg. Ceres bites at the cuff of his jeans and bows, tail wagging, and he scoops her up.
All right, let's get you fed and to bed.
She goes to nip his sleeve and he sighs, shushing her.
I know, I have my head up my ass, no need to tell me.
The first thing he does is turn the lights down low, setting Ceres back on the ground. Crowley lets out a surprised sound of thanks before he discards the sunglasses on the island counter in the kitchen, rubbing at his eyes blearily.
How can I help?
Honestly,
Izira says, opening the pantry.
Just you being here helps. I kind of hate this house.
He scoops out the dog food, Ceres bounding around his legs, wagging her tail like a whip. Then he stands up and catches the look on Crowley's face, surprised and curious.
Sorry, I don't want to bring down the mood.
It's all right. You can tell me if you want.
He busies himself with refilling Ceres's water dish, mulling it over in his head. Crowley watches him, leaning his forearms on the countertop, patiently letting him sort it out.
My mum took my dad's death hard. I mean, I did too. I was 19. She used to love living in Greece, but things changed after that, and she moved back here to be close to her side of the family.
He presses his lips together and stares at Ceres, busily spilling more food out of her bowl than the food going into her mouth.
I guess everything about this place marks life after, you know?
I understand. I think. I don't know much about losing someone close like that, but I do know about befores and afters.
I suppose you do.
I can't tell you that it gets easier, but if there's anything I can do to help, I'm here.
Izira nods and wets his chapped lips. He's overcome with exhaustion from a day of high adrenaline and desire that's left him feeling bruised. He doesn't think he could spend one more second looking at Crowley without doing something desperate.
Come on, I'll show you upstairs.
He leads him up the narrow, creaking staircase, imagining Crowley's body heat across his back. He points out the bathroom and the guest bedroom.
Towels are above the toilet, and I think there's a spare toothbrush under the sink.
Crowley tucks his hands in his pockets and leans against his door. His eyes are heavy, tired but relaxed. He looks so different in the low light, fuzzy and soft.
Thanks. I had a good time today.
Yeah, yep. Me too.
Then he steps forward and leans in, hesitating, breath warm against Ezira's ear, before closing the distance, pressing his lips to his cheek. Ezira can hear him swallow, the dry click of his throat and the soft inhale of breath. And maybe he imagines it, but he thinks he feels Crowley shiver as he lingers against his skin. His body grows heavy, pulled towards Crowley like gravity, and he sways on his feet. Against his ear, Crowley says,
"Good night."
Then he pulls away, eyes shuttered, before disappearing into the guest bedroom.